I'm Mark Peterson, and this is the FEMA Podcast. Back in early March, FEMA joined the nation in celebrating Women's History Month. To commemorate this month and to honor the contributions of the many women serving in emergency management, FEMA hosted a panel discussion titled Women in Emergency Management, Riding the Tides of Change. Shortly after that discussion concluded, we were fortunate to sit down with the four incredible women that participated in that panel. Today's episode airs on Women's Equality Day, so we thought it would be fitting to go back to that conversation and hear from these female leaders about their candid thoughts on the early days of FEMA and emergency management, and how women have and will shape the evolution of disaster response, recovery, and preparedness. Okay, so we're celebrating National Women's Month and Women's History Month. And just like a lot of American companies and most of, and all of America, FEMA is also celebrating women in emergency management. And as part of that, you know, we're here at a live forum that was held a few minutes ago with a collection of just wonderful people that I'm happy to talk with now to explore a little bit about women at FEMA, but also women in the industry of emergency management. So I want to start off with Jane Cage. Jane, you led the community-based efforts to pick up the pieces after the Joplin tornadoes, which was, you know, certainly one of the most devastating events in Missouri's history. So thank you for being here and to share your experiences.
Thank you.
And then we also have Chauncia Willis. She's the co-founder and CEO of the Institute for Diversity and Inclusion. So Chauncia, thank you for joining us and both sharing your experiences in the panel, but being here on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And then Libby Turner, who I've worked with several times in the past. Libby, you're an FCO for FEMA, which is a federal coordinating officer, been in numerous disasters around the country.
That's correct, Mark. I'm glad to be here as well.
Finally, we're joined with Kay Goss, who is the Associate Administrator in charge of National Preparedness and Training and Exercises from 1993 to 2001. Kay, thanks for coming back and being part of this.
Oh, thank you. This is like homecoming for me.
Wonderful.
Back in my favorite agency.
So I wonder if we can maybe just start with talking a little bit about how you all got involved in emergency management. Just in general, regardless of being at FEMA or in your respective agencies, what drew you to emergency management? And maybe we could start with Chauncia.
Oh, sure. Yes. Well, emergency management, and I've been in this field for 20 years, which is, believe it or not, much less time than the my counterparts here today. So based on the way that I am looking today, I've been told that I was born into emergency management just a few short years ago. So I'll believe that and run with that one. So I came into emergency management as a graduate student at Georgia State University, the School of Policy Studies, the Andrew Young School of Policy Studies. And my professor, William Waugh, he started explaining one night about how he was working on a book and talking about responding to disaster. And I said, I want to do that. And I went to him at the end of the class, and I said, I'd like to do that disaster management stuff that you were just talking about. And he said, would you? You'd be my only mentee, and you'd be the only one that's ever been interested in this. And I said, well, I'm interested. Sign me up. And so he said, I'm going to call someone from the Atlanta Fulton County Emergency Management Agency and see if they could give you a spot there as an intern. And Ellis Stanley, Jim Cook, and some others were really, and Pansy Ricks, she's passed away now, but they were really instrumental in providing me with a clear pathway to becoming an emergency manager. So in the beginning, I was considered an academic emergency manager, and there was a high priority during that time to be experienced and have field experience. And I came in with all these degrees and really no experience. And I said, you know what, I'm going to compete for a position, but I want to use my strengths. And I know how to write. I know how to plan. I know about geographic information systems. So maybe there's something I could do. And Pansy Ricks at the time was the deputy there. And she said, we will give you a position as a planner. And that was about after, I want to say, 2 months of working there as an intern. And the rest is history. From there, I went to the state and to Homeland Security, different Homeland Security firms, SAIC and URS. And I spent some time with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, working on bioweapons. And I eventually ended up with the city of Tampa. And as the emergency coordinator there, and I had opportunity to establish the emergency management program.
Jane, you represent sort of a local aspect to this conversation. How did you get involved in emergency management and disaster recovery?
I guess because I was lucky enough to live in Joplin, Missouri, when the fourth worst tornado in United States history happened to happen there, is my start. But I think I got involved because I looked around. I've been involved in lots of civic activities in Joplin over my time, but after the tornado, nothing happened at my house, nothing happened at the business that I owned, and it gave me time that other people didn't have. People who were directly affected, or if they were the utility company president or the hospital president, they didn't have any extra time, and I did. So I felt it was kind of time to step up because all of us were willing to do anything we could do to bring Joplin back.
Libby, you've been a federal coordinating officer for a long time here with FEMA, and I can remember even going back to when I started and knowing that you were a federal coordinating officer, there weren't a tremendous amount of women in the cadre. So how did you get your start, and then how did that evolve into a federal coordinating officer role?
So when I started as an FCO with FEMA, I think there were two other women in the cadre at the time, and our cadre size was about 25, 20 to 25. 25 was the number we were shooting for at the time. So I started in education and have degrees in education, educational administration, and then I worked in the corporate world for a while and eventually worked for the American Red Cross. I started as a volunteer with the Red Cross, though, many years prior to that, actually when I was in college. So I was aware of emergency management, but mostly taught first aid and CPR classes, and then later took disaster training and kind of broadened my horizons in terms of what the American Red Cross did and what disaster relief and response was all about. Later, though, as I worked for the Red Cross, there came an opportunity to go to Atlanta to work for Red Cross headquarters, and I did that. And after about 4 years, an FCO position came available. And quite honestly, there were a number of folks in the FEMA office that kept popping by my office saying, you really ought to apply for that position. And so eventually I did, and here I am now, more than 16 years later.
So, Kay, I think it's fair to say this, but when you began your role here at FEMA in 93, or as the director, or the associate director in charge of national preparedness training and exercises in 93, it's probably fair to say that emergency management as an industry was still evolving, maybe not quite at its infancy, but very young. And so I'm curious, how did you become... certainly at a high level in emergency management and at FEMA, but how did you get involved?
Well, it was quite by accident. I was an academician, and my major was public administration at the bachelor's, master's, and doctoral level. And so I got a job with the state governor office, and he was kind of giving out assignments. So for me, he named me senior associate senior assistant for intergovernmental relations. And so I had relationship with other states, with our state employees, other state officials, city employees. I had outreach to fire service, to police, and we're going down the list, retirement systems for them, a National Governors Association, Education Commission of the States, all interstate, intergovernmental activity. And so after he had given everyone on the staff their assignments, he dismissed us and said, I want you to work really hard, but I want you to have fun. So we all laughing, high-fiving each other, walk out the door. He said, wait, come back. I forgot a state agency. Who wants to be my liaison to the State Office of Emergency Services? Well, none of us had really heard of it before, and so no one volunteered. And he said, okay, then I'm going to have to assign somebody. He said, Kay, you're going to have to do it because all the people that you're already going to be working for or with are the people you need to be coordinating with. So he kind of became my mentor, and he gave me the state plan to look at. And I said, I was known as kind of a nerd, so I said, I'll read it tonight and let you know what I think. And he laughed because he said, well, you probably will, and you'll be the first person probably that's ever read it. And so sure enough, I read it, and it was copied from Missouri. And I said, you know, this is not something we came up with here in Arkansas. It's from Missouri. He said, oh, my goodness. Well, here's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have regional hearings around the state, and you're going to invite all the firefighters, all the emergency managers, all the police officers, all the mayors, all the county executives, all the city councils, everybody, and find out what they want, what they need in a state plan. And I thought, oh, my God. And so I set up 10 hearings around, and I took 4 months to do it. And I was out of the office a lot, as you can imagine, driving to these places, having the hearings, driving back, mostly in the evenings because that's when people could get away from their other responsibilities. And so by the time I got back, we had a state plan that I could propose to him and to the legislature. And then I had a weekend off, and I had a chance to think about it, and I thought, oh, my gracious. Now I know everybody who's in leadership in emergency services throughout the state, and I know what all their problems are, and I kind of know this profession that I didn't know existed, and I could see there was such a need for training, there was such a need for planning, there was such a need for exercises. And so then the next 12 years, I was responsible for putting those things in place, and became a passionate emergency manager.
So tell me, every organization across America is eagerly trying to increase diversity in their workforce for a lot of reasons. But what do you think, and I want to throw this out to the group, what do you think are some of the benefits of having more women specifically in emergency management? What does that do for us as a workforce and connecting with our customers who are disaster survivors?
Well, this is a great question. That's a phenomenal question. And I think women bring quite a lot to the table. So that question is very important, not just because I am a woman, but because I also appreciate and see the value in women. I see where if we continue or if we take that perspective that the male-dominated perspective that you know, we've kind of seen thus far in public safety. If we continue with that, we're going to, I feel, miss a lot of opportunities to add compassion, to add the resilience that women bring. Women are very courageous. Women are very resilient. When I think of a woman, I think of the fact that when we go through a lot of trauma or we have life's experiences that are very devastating, we don't break. We keep going. We find a way to get it done. And that mentality of finding a way to get it done can take this agency, and it has already, as Kay, you know, is evident of that, and the women around this table, and Angie as well. We know that women are capable. We know that they are competent. We just need to have more opportunity for advancement and leadership. And that would be absolutely, I feel, amazing and significant for the profession.
I'm really glad you said that, and I'm just going to opine for a second. But what I see is a lot of, you know, as I look at emergency management around me, it's a lot of public safety officers, law enforcement, maybe fire, male-dominated fields. Mm-hmm. And then they're sort of rising up into emergency management and then coming into either our agency or state agencies. Feels very male-dominated. So I'm just kind of curious, maybe from Libby's perspective, because I know that the federal coordinating officer, at least as it stands right now, while it's growing in our female representation, it's still not there yet. How have you experienced that cadre and maybe FCO leadership out in the field?
A lot of people that are in emergency management currently did start in public safety, and whether it was fire police or, you know, state police in various roles. including coming from the military. And so, yes, that has been male-dominated. But emergency management as a profession is a growing profession, and I am committed to it as a profession. So I don't start from the point of fire or police. I start, those are very important roles, let me just say, clearly. And for women that are in those roles as well, that's great too. I'm not saying that those are only for men. But what I am saying is that emergency management should be viewed as a profession that is an entry level from a college after college, or from some other profession. It's entered as a profession, and it is growing that way. So academia has grown in the area of emergency management. I have a friend that is a professor at Jacksonville State University in Anniston, Alabama. She was a pioneer in emergency management in academia, Dr. Jane Kushma, female, right? And her work and the work of many others, both male and female, to advance the profession of emergency management has been critical. The International Association of Emergency Managers sets kind of a standard for certified emergency managers. And that's for everyone across the board. But again, it is a profession that we should be proud of, that we should advance. Now, for some of us, we've chosen that as our career. And then emergency management is a little different in that it bleeds over, if you will, into circumstances where leaders emerge. Jane was an emerging leader in Joplin, Missouri, because there was a need in that community, and she stepped into a gap and filled it and did it amazingly, and all these years later is still viewed and looked to and reached out to by individuals and communities for her expertise in leadership, in long-term recovery, for her thoughts, for her connections. She is an important member of the emergency management community without choosing it as a profession. So within FEMA, in the federal coordinating officer world, many of the FCOs did come from similar backgrounds, fire, police, military. So again, primarily male-dominated. But when I hear someone ask the question of why women should be in emergency management, I say, why not? I'm a perfectly capable, smart, intelligent woman with high integrity.
Yes, you are.
Thank you, Jane. Thank
yes, you.
I get the big picture. I get the details. I study emergency management. I study people. I study leadership. And I apply those things as I go out and manage disasters and interact with people and then try to mentor others. So I don't say that women should be in emergency management instead of men. I just say we should be in emergency management.
But, you know, Libby, when I look at that from a completely outside perspective, you know, the first time I heard that you called people who lived in a community locals, that was a big surprise to me. But I thought, well, what is that? But what I see is that on the emergency management side, especially in those early response kind of phases, people that have come from the military or fire and police, they really believe in the incident command system as the way to solve the problem. And that's good in the very beginning, but as we go longer, as it goes into long-term recovery, you can't lead through the incident command system. You have to lead through consensus building because we all have to agree. No one forces them to do anything. And that's probably, you know, within Joplin where I was able to make a difference is because I'm kind of a consensus builder. I would rather we agree than vote. If I have my choice, I would much rather agree than vote. And when that, because every time you vote, someone loses. That's, you know, right. There's always a bad feeling about it. And I would say 75% of the time, I was the only woman in the room, you know, even in the recovery of Joplin, because the president of the hospital, the utility company, the mayor, all of those, they were all men and me. And maybe I was able to hold my own because I could listen and then try to pick up perspectives and then bring it back to a way that we could that we could find a path forward.
That's terrific. And I saw Jane do that over and over. And again, have seen her do it for years. I had a community, a fellow FEMA employee that reached out to me years ago related to the mudslide in Oso, Washington. And her request of me was, will you talk to some local and state leaders that are having to plan some things and figure out what they're going to do based on your experience in 9/11 in New York when I was with the Red Cross and some other experiences. And of course, I said, absolutely, I'll share whatever I know. So we did the call, but during that call, we spent about an hour and a half, and my answers were primarily, okay, if I had to do that, I would think about it this way. I would walk through it this way. This is what the outcome is that I think you're looking for, so think about it this way. But I also said, you need perspective of people that have been through this, and was able to connect them up with Jane Cage. And the next day, they had a conference call that actually went even longer, where Jane was able to walk them through. These were professional emergency managers, and she was able to walk them through perspectives from her experiences in Joplin that made an enormous difference to those folks during that event.
Yes, I'm always the normal person in the room.
I'm not sure I would go that far.
No, I don't know. Thank you.
You know, in thinking about being a woman leader in emergency management, I wonder if you could reflect a little bit on some of your maybe proudest accomplishments in the field. And maybe we could start with Kay. You know, when you were the associate director here at FEMA, 93, we were only about 13, 14 years old as an agency.
Oh, very, very young.
So looking back on
both
that.
As a profession and as an agency. Hmm. When I look back on it, I kind of horrify myself because when I came to the agency, I was coming from the perspective of the need for training and the need for exercising at the state and local level. And I was frantic all the time trying to get courses and trying to get instructors and try to, you know, form classrooms and things like that. And so when I came, one of the things that I talked to my training director about was, how many people are we training at FEMA? And he said 5,000. And I said, 5,000 even? And he said, yes. And I said, oh my goodness, that must mean you're turning down a number of people. And he said, yes. And I said, how many? And this really drove me crazy because he said, oh, at least 5,000. And I said, oh, my goodness, that's unacceptable. We've got to find a way to train these folks. And I said, have you given any thought to some process that we could use to be able to accept more? I mean, do we need to go to Congress and ask more money for training? Or, you know, what do we need to do? And he said, well, I have this crazy idea. You're not going to want to do it, but I've thought, you know, we have a good relationship with Frederick County Community College in Frederick, Maryland, and they actually accredit our courses, and then we can give credit to courses they teach in their emergency management program. And he said, you know, with some of your contacts, you might be able to take it beyond that. And I said, oh my goodness, yes, I've been a professor, you know, I'm really comfortable with the academic world. Why don't we try to launch a FEMA higher ed program, and why don't we try to get one of these in every state? And he said, well, I have to tell you, you're a presidential appointee, Senate confirmed, and those people don't like to launch programs that fail. And this program's going to require all sorts of coordination and diligence over time. And I said, I'm up for it. Let's do it. And he said, no, I can't recommend it. And I said, I don't care if I fail at this. It's so important. I've got to try. And he said, if you're up for it, then let's do it. Okay, who are we going to have as a director? I said, do we have anybody on staff that has a PhD? He said, I've got one guy, Wayne Blanchard. And he said, if we can talk him into it, he'd be great. So we talked to Wayne. I drive up to Emmitsburg to meet with Wayne, and he sits there during this meeting and kind of has a stunned look on his face, and he doesn't say anything. Well, John and I talk about how we're going to fashion this program, we're going to get more people into the profession and that kind of thing. And at the end of it, I said, Wayne, you haven't said anything. What are you thinking? I'd really like to hear your perspective on this. And he said, ma'am, I have never seen a presidential appointee at FEMA before, much less carried on a conversation with them. I'm trying to figure out if you're real. I said, okay, that's fair enough. So I started sending him information, you know, the emergency management section of the American Society of Public Administration had a little newsletter they started putting out. So I got him involved with that. And then he and I went through the CEM program to prove that we were real people, you know, not just political or you know, SES grade 15 people. And so as we were rolling along and more people were coming on board, they were coming on board at about 1 degree a month. And do you know, more than 20 years later, that is still the case. So we started with two programs, and now there are 600 degree and certificate programs around the country. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of by accident, but it had a great impact.
Wow. Yeah, and I just want to add to that. That is exactly where that crossroads of education, academia, and practitioners, that's what's critical. That I think that is vital to the future of emergency management. We shouldn't just go out and do what we've done, and we shouldn't just study to have case studies and academia. The folks, higher education folks, meet up at FEMA on a regular basis, and they do conference calls that anyone can participate in. Those things are important. And if we're not constantly learning and growing this profession, it was an emerging profession when I first got involved. It is now a growing profession.
Okay, so let's talk about the future of emergency management. Chauncia, how do we increase the representation of women in emergency management?
I think we have to do it with intentionality. We have to be intentional about it. I was joking with Administrator Gaynor because he said, look at this. You see FEMA? Add an L-E. Female. We are in support of the female. So I thought that was funny, but it kind of demonstrates the open perspective that he has and the desire that he has to bring on more diversity to empower women to become leaders in emergency management. And in order to begin to change that tide, to increase the level of the levels of women in emergency management, I really believe that it's going to take a concerted effort, and it's going to take our male allies and our female allies who are actually in positions of authority to be open to mentorship, to agree to become champions, coaches, if you will, to create leadership accelerator opportunities within FEMA, within the field of emergency management. And with our institute, the Institute for Diversity and Inclusion in Emergency Management, we say IDEAM because it's a long title. So we feel that accelerating leadership is critical, and being intentional about it and really understanding that women really have an opportunity to have a good long career in the field of emergency management is fertile ground here. And with the right support, the right level of education, encouragement, we can really change the dynamics and really benefit not only the organization by increasing women, but also the clients that we serve, our communities. They need our perspective.
So I want to go back to something that was said in the forum. It was an idea about helping women find their voice in emergency management. So it's not so much just getting more women in the door and working in the field, but it's also empowering women, right? What are some of your advice to this group of women here in the room? What is some of your advice for emerging leaders in emergency management?
My advice would be to consider the field as an opportunity. Right now, honestly, at HBCUs, which are historically black colleges and universities, and then you have MSIs, which are minority-serving institutions, and the tribal colleges, a lot of the students there are women. You have about 65% in HBCUs. 65% in some HBCUs is made up of 65% women. So you have fertile ground right there to begin to recruit and to expose the field of emergency management to them. I went to Savannah State last year, and I was called there because they said the students here are interested in emergency management, but they've never seen a female emergency manager. they've never seen a woman of color that's in emergency management. And so I said, well, I'll make a trip at my own expense to get there to you. And I brought my fellow emergency managers with me. When I opened the door, I said, surprise, there's a unicorn in the room. I exist. We exist. We're here. And the professor, he said, you know, it was so significant for them because without actually seeing a vision of what they kind of want to become, they were probably going to go into a different direction and go into criminal justice. And a lot of emergency management students divert into criminal justice. And so he said, you know, you gave them a new perspective, a new vision of what it can be. And so I think we all do that to some extent. And if we don't, we probably should do it more often. So that would be my response.
So I love this work. I love the people with whom I do this work. I love these communities that we get to go into and make a difference. And again, I'll start with what I kind of touched on a little bit earlier in the workshop, which was that if we come into this intentionally, into emergency management, and we embrace academia as well as what we learn as practitioners, we put all of that together in a manner that demonstrates our capabilities.
It's magic.
Right? It is. And so as women, if we can recognize and articulate that vision, that culture of emergency management and what it really is, then I think women could be drawn to that. I didn't know when I started working in the world, and I didn't know when I worked at Red Cross. I knew very little about FEMA. I didn't know what an FCO was. I'm not sure it even existed back then. I had no intent to become an FCO, right? But the things that I loved, the things that I enjoyed, the things that I learned came together, experiences that I had. I worked for corporate America, but I learned a lot about operations management and logistics and accounting and all kinds of things that served me well as a federal coordinating officer. But I'll go back to one other thing, which was, you know, if emergency management kind of was born out of fire and police and such, then it also emerged from with a sense of response, right? Response was the focus. And so because those early days of emergency management, and maybe even today, is kind of viewed as a male profession, it certainly was response-oriented. But emergency management has grown to embrace not just response, but recovery, mitigation, preparedness, all of those pieces in a much bigger way. I loved what you described earlier, Kay, about kind of the growth of that and how you put it together in Arkansas. And so, again, coming into this profession, we shouldn't be viewing it just as response, just as a male-oriented activity. We have to see emergency management differently. We have to change our culture. I think organizations are made up of culture and structure. I'm kind of simple-minded, so I break it down pretty simply. If our culture is right, we'll fix our structure will support that. If our culture's rotten, we just change our structure all the time because we can't acknowledge that our culture's rotten, so we just change things all the time, right? And if our culture is such that this is what emergency management is, it's all of these pieces, it's this entire perspective, then women will be attracted to that because they get it. Men will be attracted too, but women will be attracted to that, and it won't be viewed as a, quote, male profession. Mm-hmm. It will be viewed as a profession. So
when I first came to FEMA, like I said, I was really concerned about the need for training, need for exercises, planning. So that preparedness director, it was perfect for me. And as I became acquainted with the employees, I appointed a woman as a program manager for the Emergency Food and Shelter Program. And everyone said, wow. You know, a woman has never been program manager at FEMA before. Mm. And she was also African-American. They said, no African-American has been a program manager. And so that kind of gave me a spur on to do more things. And so the following year, I appointed a division director as for exercises, a woman. And she was the first woman to become a division director. So by then, I was flying because I realized, you know, I had the power to make a difference for our agency and for our society. Mm-hmm. So then I became, you know, a warrior for diversity. Mm-hmm. And that is true in my private career since leaving FEMA and nonprofit work as well. So I'm excited to be on Chauncea's team, you know, and advocating that.
Mm-hmm. And she's a great asset based on her experiences here in FEMA. And she doesn't tell the full breadth of her story because I've met employees today who are very diverse and who have basically given me a complete background on Kay. And I would never have known that she made so many strategic, supportive moves to put women in positions of authority, to put people of color in positions where they had an opportunity to excel and to be promoted. And, you know, to have a champion that understands and really gets the need for diversity and really understands that organizations are much more productive and competitive when they are diverse at a rate of over 33%, you really have to appreciate someone like a Kay who didn't sit in her position because she was, you know, number two for the agency. She didn't rest on her laurels. She said, I'm going to do something while I'm here. And she started making vanguard moves. So when I think of a powerful woman in emergency management, I think of Kay Goss, and here she is today. She's someone who took the time to really promote the perspective of a woman and their value. You have people here who are telling your story, so, I mean, that is phenomenal.
We welcome your comments and suggestions on this and future episodes. Help us to improve the podcast by rating us and leaving a comment. If you have ideas for future topics, send us an email at fema-podcast@fema.dhs.gov. If you'd like to learn more about this episode or other topics, visit fema.gov/podcast.